numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It is a numbers game. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Circa Resort. Circa Hotel Resort Casino.
Yes.
Casino Resort Hotel. Resort Hotel. Casino Hotel Resort.
Spa? I don't think there's a spa here, actually.
There's no spa?
I don't know. I should have talked.
Circa, known for two things primarily: a massive sports book, the biggest in the world, and then Stadium Swim, a pool where everybody watches sporting events and bets on them as well.
That's right.
Which, when Derek Stevens came up with that idea, some of us were like, really, Derek? Are people going to watch a Astros-Mariners game on a Wednesday in the middle of July? He's like, yeah, they will.
Yeah, they will. Yeah. They will.
Yeah, he's right.
I have never been out there, actually, where it hasn't been absolutely jammed with people.
Jam. All right. Too much to get to on this show. I'm not sure if we have enough time in 2 hours. First of all, our guests. Drew Dinsick will join us. Whale Capper, talk NFL. Week 4 gone by. Week 5 coming up. Will Hill with all of his bets, baseball and beyond, as the postseason is finally here. Todd Wright on some fantasy. And then Paul Spohr, full MLB preview, all 4 wild card series. He's got thoughts. We'll do game ones. We'll do the series themselves. We'll get into the format. Should I just do the format real quick? No, let me save the format when we talk baseball. I want to talk about the bets that we lost yesterday on baseball, because that Mets-Braves doubleheader, let's just start there. That Mets-Braves doubleheader was, at least the first game, was everything you could have possibly hoped for in game, 2,429 of the MLB season. It was the best game of all of them. So if you sat out the first 2,428, you didn't miss much if you just landed on that game. As we show the win probability chart of this, remember, headed into the game, Mets and Braves, if they split, they both got in. If there was a sweep, the team doing the sweeping and the Diamondbacks would get in. It was 3-0 Braves, just sort of moseying along in this ballgame. And then a 6-run eighth, top half of the eighth from the Mets, turn this around, only to have the Braves score 4 in the bottom half to retake the lead against Edwin Diaz, 7-6, only to have Francisco Lindor, Chris Felica's NL MVP.
It's incredible.
Because he's completely cray. Only to have the Mets go back up in the top of the ninth and win that game one and clinch a playoff berth. And as great as the first game was, then the second game was as ho-hum as you might have imagined it to be.
Yep.
The Braves took a 1-0 lead, which might as well have been a 100-0 lead. They end up winning it 3-0 going away. Hard to sort of get involved in that game. But anyway, in the end, the Mets and the Braves make the postseason. My Braves to miss does not win. Took it to the last game of the season. Did not win at 7.5-1, nor does our show bet at 8-1 win. And the Diamondbacks, I have a couple Diamondbacks World Series matchups. Those are gone by the wayside. I have 6 more. We'll get to those later on the show that I made as well. I went crazy with World Series matchups. Never done this before.
Yes, you
but,
did.
But, yeah. I've been preaching for 2 months now. This is the year to do them. This is the year to do them, to hit one of these. We'll show them later on the show, guys. We'll do that coming up.
Specifically on the match, we talked about this a couple times, though. Matchups versus exactas. Are you a believer in that going forward, the matchups, or is it just specifically for baseball?
I for this year's baseball season, I see no reason why you should add that extra series when the numbers on the matchups are awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
So there it is. Baseball, we'll get to. I'll give you all my picks. We'll go through the format. A lot of people aren't even aware of what the format is on the baseball postseason. We'll get to that coming up. Look at that. That's a beautiful looking bracket right there. Free for all. Throw them all up in the air. We'll see what happens. Okay, football yesterday, real quick, because we got to get to these two games also before we get to Drew. Monday night doubleheader, which we all love a Monday night doubleheader. After that baseball game, after game one between the Braves and the Mets, I immediately thought, oh, good luck, NFL, with your Titans-Dolphins matchup topping this. I sort of floated this earlier in the week that I think the Dolphins might be the worst team in the NFL. They might be the worst team in the NFL. They lose. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, because Tua's not there. Okay. They lose 31-12 in the end to the Tennessee Titans. That score a little worse than it actually was, because there was a really strange penalty at the end for a free kick after a safety that Tyler Huntley took that the announcers and the official in the booth had no idea how to explain to the viewing audience. Tennessee ended up with the ball at the Miami 10 after the safety.
Yeah.
And they got another garbage touchdown. Anyway, Will Levis knocked out of this game early with a shoulder injury. Not too early, though, for him to throw a pick right to the opponent, right to the chest of a defensive lineman. So there was that.
Who caught it with his legs?
Who caught it with his legs, ultimately.
Which I love seeing, Gil, because I just need Levis to keep playing. Don't bench him. Don't bench him.
Oh, God.
Most interceptions. Let's go.
Well, Mason Rudolph went the rest of the way. Mason Rudolph better than Will Levis, but I'm not sure if he's the answer either. He was 9 of 17 for 85 yards. By the way, that interception by Emmanuel Ogba, just to be clear on that. But anyway, 31-12. Let's just talk about this for a second. First of all, congratulations to everybody who had Jacksonville last winless. You are the winner. The Jacksonville Jaguars are the last winless team in the National Football League after just 4 weeks. Never would I have even considered them. So I can't even get upset about that. But a couple of things. One, Tennessee, they're going back to Levis. It appears if you're listening to everything they say after the game, they're going back to Levis. This is not a quarterback controversy. They're going back to Billy Levis, who, again, ill-advised in his short time in that game yesterday. I am actually more interested in the Dolphins side of this because I have to tell you that I've been saying, you know, with the Mike McDaniel thing that people, I've been saying sort of derisively that NFL Neanderthals are going to turn against him because he's a quirky guy and he's a nerdy guy. And if things go bad, that kind of stuff doesn't really play as well. I have to tell you, I thought that was a terrible, there's a couple things going on here. That was a terrible coaching job by the Dolphins yesterday, I thought. And also, it's front office malpractice that they didn't have a backup in place that was suitable for them. So Mike White, they got rid of at some point, right? Tim Boyle, who played last week, apparently they just think he was terrible, and so he wasn't ready to play in this game. And so they went up, they pick up Tyler Huntley. Tyler Huntley, who, by the way, Pro Bowler, I just want to say that.
Yeah, what was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah, or Pro Bowler at one point.
I forgot to make that joke yesterday.
But seriously, there is something about being able to, like, if you can't coach up a guy, so obviously Pro Bowler was an anomaly, but if you can't coach up a guy who is a veteran in this league and who does have running ability, so he is multidimensional, right? If you can't coach up a guy for one game on short, you know, as short as that run-up was.
Yeah, 2 weeks, right?
That's pretty bad. Right. I mean, again, I'll do this because I know people go crazy when I'll bring up Joe Gibbs. If Joe Gibbs can coach up Scabs to a 3-0 record, right, in 1987, that's coaching players up. Right. This is, how can you not figure out a way to be more competitive in this football game? By the way, I'm also hearing Dolphins fans saying, well, this shows you how good Tua is, right? People think Tua is overrated, but this proves that Tua Tagovailoa is as good as we think he is. I don't think that's true. I think just because you were malpracticed in coming up with a backup quarterback and couldn't coach up that backup quarterback doesn't immediately follow that Tua is that great. I don't think that makes that true either. So I just think the Dolphins are in bad shape. This was really bad. This was an embarrassing performance.
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised. I don't know if I won't go as strong as you with, you know, Huntley did just kind of get there. Okay, I guess you're still learning. And I'll give a little bit of excuse for that. But it is, I mean, you're talking about, the other thing about McDaniel is, like, you can see, it feels like you can see it on his face. Like, he seems far more checked out in game than, like, when his team is fully there. And he's 1-6 now, the Dolphins are without Tua.
Kelly, that was part of it. He looked like he was lost.
It's looked like that the past 2 weeks when they show him on the sidelines. It's not the same fiery guy who's involved in every aspect of the game, it looks like.
The other game last night, Detroit and Seattle. Apparently when Detroit and Seattle play, it's always going to be a high-scoring affair. It just is. 4 years in a row on this. Detroit ends up winning at 42-29. Jared Goff, 18 of 18 for 292. Now, admittedly, I was going volume back and forth between the two games, so I didn't hear Joe Buck or Troy Aikman make a big enough deal about this in the time that I had the volume up for this, so maybe someone will correct me and say that they did, but that's unbelievable. We've never seen that before. That's a record. By the way, he didn't get a perfect passer rating, which makes you say, well, then what does passer rating mean if that's not perfect?
Right, yeah.
If that's not 158.3. But the Lions just kind of outlasted them. And I will just say this. I feel better about the Seahawks having lost that game the way they did than I did them going 3-0. They were really competitive in that game. Kenneth Walker was great in defeat. They
Him being back was obviously huge.
They got hosed on a clear defensive pass interference late that would have cut the game to one score late. Whether they win or not is still up in the air, but at least it would have been closer than the 42-29 final. But good on the Lions. This was Jared Goff's best game, not only in addition to the 18 of 18 for 292, the first quarterback in NFL history with a 100% completion rate in a game of 11 plus pass attempts. I want to say that Kurt Warner, I was seeing that Kurt Warner at 10 for 10 was the previous mark, but this is saying 11 plus pass attempts from Underdog NFL. Either way, it shatters that. And he also caught a touchdown pass. And so again, for me, Detroit and Seattle both look like playoff teams in the NFC.
Yep, completely agree. I think I was impressed with both teams last night. You're right. I've been a little bit higher on Seattle than you, but you're right. There was a little bit more confirmation, even in a loss last night, that team kind of deserves to at least be in this NFC playoff conversation. And then, man, Detroit, I think the scary part about Detroit is even with the wins they've had this season, I think this team can still get better, which that's a little scary, I think, for the rest of the NFC.
And Geno, I should not sell Geno short. 38 of 56 for 395 and made some really good plays out there as well. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on his thoughts this past weekend. What did he learn? What is noise? What is substantial? What's coming up week 5 for him and his bets that he's already made? It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game live from Circa, downtown Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Steel City USMC, Steel City Jarhead, said, unfortunately, Pete probably did more harm to his chances at the Hall of Fame than he should have with his actions and speech while alive. In death, he'll probably have a better chance to get in. He was a special man in every way, RIP. I don't deny any of that, that he was his own worst enemy. Doesn't affect my conclusion that we are stewards of a museum. Put him in, put a plaque, say anything you want on the plaque about him being banned from baseball, his actions of not admitting it, anything you want to write there. But the arrogance of not allowing future generations to even know that player existed as a great ball player is just ridiculous. Edward Lefevre, noted Paula Badosa fan. He says, Gil, great show as per usual. Only thing missing is my favorite guest, Steve Fezzik. He is gold, Jerry. We'll get Fezzik on Fridays. Fridays with Felika Fezzik and Dr. Bob to close every show. Kyle Rebusell. Personally, I think there is no Hall of Fame without Bonds and Rose. That said, I believe Bonds understood the consequences before taking steroids and was willing to risk Hall of Fame to chase home run records. The thing about all this also, which I didn't mention, is, again, or maybe I did mention it, again, it's everybody's got their own biases and prisms of what is worse than other things, right? So, and within the steroid argument itself, you have guys who clearly took steroids with eyes, right? Pudge Rodriguez ballooned into this mammoth guy. And then all of a sudden, when he stopped taking him, he was like this straw. He was like the scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz. He's in the Hall of Fame. Nobody says a word because they like Pudge. But Bonds was not a good guy, so he's out, right? So there's all kinds of hypocrisies within the eras. What about guys before who were spitballing with their baseballs, right? There's all kinds of cheating. So there's also that subjectivity that exists in this. Steeler Jack 50 at Jack Handy says, my issue with Pete Rose is the hypocrisy of baseball. Oh, there you go. I think common sense would tell us that Ohtani was making those bets. For selfish reasons, I don't have a problem with MLB sweeping it under the rug. How about we give Pete the same courtesy? Well said, Jack Hannon, in my opinion. So many of these tweets. Appreciate all of them on the show. Best listeners in the game. Let's talk some Survivor. Let's talk some fantasy with the greatest sports talk radio host there ever was. I will not argue with anybody on this. It is not up for debate. It's the great Todd Wright, the former host of All Night with Todd Wright back at ESPN Radio in the day. It's Todd Wright now joining us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Todd?
Good morning, Gil. Good morning, Kelly.
Let me ask you, let's crescendo to Survivor. Let us start with fantasy. You still love your fantasy and Rashee Rice's injury in Kansas City. If you are an owner with Rashee Rice and you were not prepared for this, you are not rostered with a replacement. What do you do? Who do you pick up here?
Right. Well, nice caveat, because this is why fantasy teams have benches. So you should have someone that was able to you to plug and play. And then waivers is a second option for you to find someone to potentially put on the bench behind the person you're putting in the lineup. If that's not the case, if that bench player is on a bye this week, because there are four teams on a bye, you are looking for someone like Wicks from Green Bay should be available. Leggett from Carolina should be available. Thomas, Jacksonville may be available. Jennings still may be available. Someone played him, then might cut him. Unhappy with just the three catches despite the good yardage last week with San Francisco. And I even a week ago, Gil, just to fortify my bench, picked up Mooney in Atlanta, because clearly people are finally getting the hint that Kyle Pitts can't play this game. So Kirk Cousins' second pass catcher, not out of the backfield, looks like Mooney behind Drake London in Atlanta. So those are all some options. And of note, for those Kelce owners that were waiting for something to happen, It happened, because Rice seemed to be running the Kelce package. And without Rice out there, Kelce is back running the Kelce package.
Yeah, and you answered one of my other questions, which is, there's a couple of them. One, is a Carolina receiver worthwhile with Andy Dalton now at quarterback? Is there a viable Jaguars wideout even with their futility thus far this year? And you kind of did answer that already, correct?
And in addition to Leggett, I picked up and played Deontay Johnson last week and used him because of Dalton making their offense suddenly, let's just call it, capable. And Johnson being a playmaker when he was on the field in Pittsburgh, he was always a threat to score. I think he will be used. It might only be a short-term option, Gil, but Deontay Johnson, when he's on the field, is capable of scoring touchdowns. And he's shown that ability already in just 2 weeks with Andy Dalton.
I'm curious about a couple of things, because I don't play season-long fantasy anymore. I don't play any kind of fantasy, but I'm curious because I remember these kinds of situations. Did folks give up on, I'll use the Skins, did folks who have Terry McLaurin give up on him? Did you see him getting cut from anybody's teams?
Yes, they did. In one of my leagues where I laid in wait and I went running back early because I was picking at the end of the first round. So end of round one, start of round two. Most people overvaluing, say, Breece Hall, overvaluing Bijan a bit, taking all these receivers. So I had my choice and I hammered Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor. I did pass on Barkley. I have some remorse there. And then all I did was draft pass catchers. And then in the eighth round, I said, here's where I got to do it. Let's go Jaden Daniels and let's start him and let's see what the kid can do. And it's been great. Later in that round, McLaurin was drafted. And after 2 weeks, the owner in that league who drafted him dumped him. So I picked him up before the breakout in week three. And suddenly, Gil, I have a Washington stack of Daniels and McLaurin going each week, and it's wonderful.
Let's go. How do you cut Terry McLaurin? He's incomparable, Todd. He's incomparable. Through 4 weeks, number one fantasy player is Alvin Kamara. Did you see this coming?
No. And if anyone did, please tweet it, Gil. And Gil can let me know if I don't hear it live on the show, because Kamara was at that age like Joe Mixon, where even the Matthew Berry's of the world reminded us their fantasy production drops off, and it's even before the round number of 30 that we've heard all along for running back supposedly. So Kamara was at, I think he's 28 or right around 28, but maybe it's Kubiak, very good interior offensive line for the Saints, maybe just the philosophy to start the season. But Gil, if you combine the first three running backs in most drafts in fantasy this year, McCaffrey, Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, and add up their numbers, Kamara's numbers are better than the top three drafted. He almost matches them in total yardage. He has six touchdowns and a ridiculous 97 touches of the football.
Last fantasy question, because I want to get to Survivor, but I'm thinking out loud here with the McLaurin thing. Did anybody cut him? What about before the season? What before on drafts? Because it was Sam Darnold starting for Minnesota, did Justin Jefferson drop in drafts? I'm just curious.
Significantly. I'm sure in some leagues he went in the top five, but in one of my leagues, I took him seventh and gladly did. In a league I observed where I have a lot of friends, some media friends, he went 20th overall in a 14-team league. It didn't make sense to me from this standpoint, Gil. If you looked at what Sam Darnold had for coaching and play calling in his time with the Jets in Carolina, it was brutal. Kyle Shanahan brought him in and said, we're going to be okay if Purdy goes down this year. So he worked with Kyle Shanahan for a year. Then he goes with one of the best offensive minds and play callers and a head coach in Minnesota and Kevin O'Donnell. And we knew there was no guesswork once McCarthy went down. So I said, look, this is still a very talented guy. He's with a very capable quarterback. And at least at the time, I thought, Gil, that Sam Darnold could have a comeback in 2024 with Minnesota, the way Baker Mayfield had a comeback with the right play calling and coaching in Tampa Bay in 2023. So far, so good.
So far, so good, for sure. All right, 90 seconds. Todd, by the way, is the host of the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast and the Todd Wright Survivor Podcast as well. Who you got this week, Todd?
For Survivor, it's right back at you, Gil, because two in the crosshairs for me this week, if you're doing game theory, would be Indy on the road as an anti-Jacksonville play, even though we're not sure about Indy's number one QB and we're not sure about Indy's number one running back, Jonathan Taylor. That's also a big fantasy topic this week. And Washington. I was one of those, Gil, who played Washington week one last year against Arizona and survived, just from a game theory standpoint. But here, do we jump on Washington and push in week five against a very bad Cleveland team? Are we buying in that early? Do you think Washington will be a top three survivor play this week?
I think it. I don't know if it's top three, but it'll be up there. I you know how this is for me. I can't embrace it yet. Like, I'm so scarred in, you know, what has it been since 1991 that they've won in January of 92 since they won a Super Bowl, and they've only had blips since then. And I can't embrace it yet. So for me, it would be Seattle this week, I think. I don't know if
even
I could.
Even coming off the short week.
Even coming off the short week. Hosting the Giants, I think that's where I would go. Yeah. But that's just me being a Skins fan who just isn't ready to embrace it, you know?
I know. We listeners love that. With what's going on with Washington and with Jaden Daniels and with them performing this way and just what it means for you talking about them on the show adds just another layer of early season entertainment for us, and I hope it continues.
Thank you, Todd. That's very nice of you. Todd Wright, everybody. Thank you so much. I'll be listening to the Todd Wright Fantasy Football and Survivor Podcast. Thank you, sir. The great Todd Wright, everybody. Kind enough to join us. Paul Spohr, Major League Baseball postseason begins today. That's next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
A numbers game has a special offer. This week only, you can score 40% off of our football season special when you use promo code ANG. Sign up now and get full Visa Pro access to everything we do from now through the Super Bowl, including daily best bets with the leaderboard showcasing the top pros and their impressive ROI, 19 hours of live programming featuring expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, proven betting systems used by professional handicappers, exclusive betting splits updated every 5 minutes with DraftKings odds. See where the money is moving. Save 40% off the football season special, I should say, this week only, though, when you sign up and use promo code ANG. Limited time. Offer expires on October 7th, and it is October 1st today. A special numbers game investigation reveals, so do not wait. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Little news in college hoops. You see this? Gonzaga joining the Pac-12. End of an era in Spokane, Washington. Gonzaga, which rose to prominence in college basketball in the late 90s and has been a staple at the top of college basketball, well, not the very tip top, but in the top ranks of college basketball since then, now for really a quarter of a century, they are joining the Pac-12. So a huge boon to the Pac-12, and Gonzaga will now chase their first elusive national championship as a member of the Pac-12. That is a massive development in college sports. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Samuel Ciara. What a power move by the Braves to start Kenny Powers in the second game yesterday. I got a few of these. No hitter through three innings, only one hit through four and seven Ks. He did look like Kenny Powers, didn't he? Rick James, not that Rick James, but just a different Rick James, says, nobody will ever play the sport as hard as Pete Rose. Kids growing up are afraid to slide or even run out of pop-up. Hall of Fame for sure. Yeah, I said that at the top when talking about him. As much as he's known for all the numbers, really, when you think of it, was there ever a better nickname than Charlie Hustle? The head first slide, the running to first base on a walk, which drove some people crazy, but was just part of it. By the way, if I could recommend a docuseries, there's a Pete Rose 4-part docuseries. I want to say it's on HBO Max. Super good. Really interesting. Chance Copperpot, could not agree more with your takes on Rose and Bonds. If Reggie Bush can get his Heisman back, why can't we restate Rose? It's disgusting. He passed away before MLB does what was right. And Gaba, who was giving me the instruction about juego versus partido in Spanish, he says, huge fan of the pod, both the numbers game and the megapod. Thank you, sir. And let's see. I don't even know this one. Should I? Well, I don't want to Ron Burgundy through that one as I look at some of this stuff. I don't want to tread on some dangerous ground. Okay, before we get to Paul Spohr, here are my World Series matchups. Two have already gone by the wayside. With the Diamondbacks elimination, my big Royals Diamondbacks 400-1 is donezo. So is my Guardians Diamondbacks 66-1. Now, I've never done this before. I've never gone crazy on World Series matchups, but I've been preaching this now for a couple months at least, where I'm like, this is the year. This is the year to take your shot because it is the most wide open. And I'm not being prisoner of the moment, I don't believe. It's the most wide-open baseball postseason I can ever really remember, where there is no team without flaw. And so I've got six. These were available at BetMGM. Good on BetMGM. These are not exactas. I do not need one team to beat another in the World Series. I simply need for these teams to get to the World Series and face each other. I have three that revolve around the Cleveland Guardians. The Guardians have a first-round bye. I got them against the Braves at 80-1, against the Padres at 35-1, and against the Phillies at 16-1. You may notice that in the National League, the team that I have three different ways is the Padres. I got them against the Guardians, as I just mentioned, 35-1, but also against the Tigers at 50-1 and the Orioles at 25-1. And there's also a Tigers-Braves in there in the middle as well at 125-1. So no Yankees, no Dodgers. If any of that happens, then I'll lose them all. But I am prepared to do so in a year where I think it's wide open and it's incumbent upon you to take a shot with this kind of stuff. So good on BetMGM for having it. Not every book has the matchups. Most have exactas, but not everyone has the matchups. So cannot wait for these games today. We have series bets, also have the World Series matchups. Should be a fun October. And who better to talk baseball postseason with us than Paul Spohr at Spohr on Twitter. He works at Fangraphs. The name of the podcast is Sleeper in the Bust. He joins us now via the Progressive guest line. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well, Gil. Thanks for having me on.
What a time of year. Is this the greatest day of the baseball? Would you say today? What's better, today or opening day?
Oh, today, I think. I mean, opening day is amazing. I do love the excitement of the beginning of a season and 6-month grind. They're pretty close, but the back-to-back-to-back-to-back playoff games is pretty electric. So, yeah, I'm pretty dialed in for that. And I'm on my way to Houston right now for the Tigers game, so I'm doubly excited.
Oh, wow. Are you at an airport right now? Is that why you're via phone?
No, I'm driving.
You're driving. Oh, of course you are, because you're in Austin. How long is that drive Austin to Houston?
About 3 hours. Me and my sister are heading out.
Good for you. Okay, Paul Spohr going to be in the ballpark today. Let's start there. Let's start with that series. Your beloved Tigers, who just had an unbelievable run to the finish line to get into the playoffs. Then they lose a couple to the White Sox, so they end up with a sixth seed, and they are taking on the Houston Astros. The Astros, the third division winner, so no matter what the records of the wild card teams, the number three division winner always gets the three seed. It's the best of three. They're all in Houston. Are you going to go to all of them if they're all there? If all three are playing?
No, just today.
Just today. Okay. By the way, they're all in the home ballpark of the higher seed. Today, tomorrow, Thursday, if necessary. It's Skubal against Valdez. Who you got today? Who do you have in this series?
Well, it is the Tigers' best chance, obviously, to get ahead with the ace, Skubal, best pitcher in baseball this year. Framber Valdez, I think, is also an ace, really top-tier pitcher. However, he does kind of have a career history in the playoffs that isn't as sharp. I think he gets up to about a mid-to-high fours ERA with a 130 whip. Everything gets a bit tougher. His pitch to contact maybe doesn't work as well in the playoffs. So I like Tigers' opportunity today. This is the series, in my opinion. Being a three-game set, Obviously, with the crazy baseball that they've been playing, I still wouldn't count them out if they lost. But this is it for the Tigers, in my opinion. They have to win this first one and then try to find a way to steal one of the next two with their kind of mishmash pitching that they've been doing. You've got the best pitcher in baseball. Now, the tough part is with them running Fromber, it does neutralize some of their best bets. Parker Meadows, Riley Green, Kerry Carpenter, and Cole Keith are their four best hitters, and they're all lefties. A couple of them might not even start. A.J. Hinch is not afraid of doing that to make sure that they get set up in verse righty situations late in game. So don't be surprised if you see like an Ibanez in there or a Justin Henry Molloy for a couple of those guys, because that's what Hinch does. So I do still think Houston wins the series. I got to give my honest opinion there. I'm pulling very hard for the Tigers. I think they win today and then lose two in a row, unfortunately, and end the Cinderella run.
Wow. Interesting. That's from a Tigers fan. Thinks they win today, then thinks they lose games two and three tomorrow and Thursday. What the Tigers are doing, we have not made enough of this on this show. There was some years ago this was somewhere back, not quite when I used to go to the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, but a couple years after that, when VSiN was first started, I mentioned this paper, right? These were all kinds of like grad students who were looking for jobs in sports, and they would write all these papers, and one of them always stuck with me, which is, and someone reminded me of this on Twitter, forgive me that I can't remember who, but it's like the optimal way to pitch. Now, keep in mind, this is like, you know, many years ago, the optimal way to pitch was to actually have guys pitch, every pitcher pitched two innings and, mishmash a baseball game. Now, obviously that had no sense of managing a 162 game schedule and that kind of thing. But until we saw the Giants win three World Series at the beginning of last decade with, again, what were the most common, players over those three World Series, they had the most relievers that stayed on the team for all three of those championships. Then we saw the Royals, right? The Royals, through constraints of their salary, their payroll, pardon me, that they had to rethink how they played baseball. They were the first to admit, hey, if we had a big payroll, we would have done it the conventional way, but they had to figure out a different way to play baseball. So it was the Herrera, Davis, Holland. Was that the order
that trio? Yeah.
Yeah. That trio that used, and they got them to win a World Series. This Detroit thing is closer to that paper that I'm talking about, that research paper, than anything ever. They basically have two starters and are mishmashing the rest of this, right?
Exactly. They've been playing what people have been calling Legion ball, American Legion ball or playoff baseball literally for 6 weeks now. So to that end, they're ready to go with all of this. Everyone knows that their number's going to get called when it gets called. You got to be ready. Tyler Holton, sometimes you're starting the game. The very next day, you might be closing the game. And so they've got the buy-in, and that's what you get with a young team, something that Royals team had too. They brought in some veterans to kind of go with their run, Johnny Cueto, Whit Merrifield, but they also had a lot of young guys, and the buy-in is definitely easier on that front because they're just trying to get the playing time, right? So I don't think they have anybody over 30 on the offense, and Kenta Maeda might be the only guy over 30 on the team as a whole. So they have the right setup. It's just a matter of, are these guys still going to hold up? Is Brant Herder and Tyler Holton, are they still going to be studs? Is Will Best going to be good? The problem with the Tigers bullpen that I have a little bit of is that it isn't a swing and miss bullpen the way that HDH one was for KC. So you're snuffing the ball out of play completely. The Tigers don't do that quite as much, and that does worry me a little bit.
All right, Paul's going to stick with us for one more segment. He's a Tigers fan, but he says he thinks the Tigers win game one and then they lose games two and three. We'll get his thoughts on the 4-5 game in the American League, the Royals and the Orioles in that series, and then, of course, the two series in the NL, the Mets and the Brewers, the Braves and the Padres. Paul Spohr coming back on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, top of the hour after a numbers game, Money Moves with Stormy Bonnetoni and Mike Somich today. Somo bombing for 2 hours with Stormy. Good little combination there today. Then after that, Prop Points with John Hansen from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern. Then Make It Rain with Adam Shine after that at 3 p.m. Eastern. All that you can possibly handle sports betting wise on VSiN, rather, the Sports Betting Network, coming up after a numbers game. We at Tweets at Beating the Book just want to read a couple here before we get back to Paulie. Jason McKinney took your advice early and have a Padres Royals ticket at 200-1. Good luck with that one. And James Sott, are you adopting the Guardians this postseason like you did in April and May? World Series, here we come. Yes, actually, Jim. I am, and I have three World Series matchups with the Guardians. And again, apologies to Adam Burke. I'm going to borrow them for a little while. But he can. We can both do it together. That's his team. Okay, let's rejoin Paul Spohr, who's on his way to Minute Maid to watch the Astros and the Tigers this morning. That is the first of the ball games, the first of the quartet of games, two American League games first, and then we go to the National League games because they're allowing the Mets to travel and then the Braves to travel even the furthest. Those are the two late games. Paul, one thing before we get to the other three series, you and I off air last week when we were texting when the Tigers were clinching spots, I was bringing up the fact that I talk about on this show, and I'm sure others do as well. I talk about NFL Coach of the Year, right? We talk about NBA Coach of the Year. Manager of the Year markets actually exist, but for whatever reason, we don't talk about them. I wonder what AJ Hinch's number was on August 11th. Why is it that we don't bet this thing? We should probably be talking about this more every year.
Narratives that pop up, and it's not always just, you know, the highest winning team. So I definitely think there is a market to explore. And obviously Hinch wrote himself quite a case here down the stretch because his button pressing was a huge, huge part of the Tigers' run. So not just my bias as a Tigers fan, I really do think he has a strong case for the manager of the year.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of teams that could claim it, right? The Royals, the Guardians, right? There's other teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's get to the other series. Let's talk about the 4-5 in the American League next, which is the next chronologically today. That's the Royals and the Orioles, where the Orioles are minus 175 series favorites. The Royals plus 150-ish on the comeback. Who do you like?
You know, I like the Royals, I think, both in the series, and I'm pretty intrigued in them today. Obviously, if you like somebody for the series in these three-gamers, you almost certainly like them for game one, yeah. Obviously outside of my Tigers concern there. But yeah, like I think that the Orioles are still kind of on their uphill incline, and obviously the Royals aren't some established team either. So this is really interesting. I thought it would have been really interesting if the Orioles had faced more of a veteran team like this Houston Ball Club, for example, to show kind of the old and new, but instead they're facing another new team. That said, I'm just not sure where they're getting their pitching from in Baltimore outside of Corbin Burns right now. Like, what is Grayson in the rotation? Like, who's starting game three? I guess Eflin. That's not a bad 1-2-3, but then where's the bullpen? I don't know how trustworthy that is. The biggest key in the playoffs, like the single biggest key, is home runs, right? We've been seeing that the last few years. The team that hits the most home runs, they're going to have success because that's the quick strike scoring. And the Baltimore bullpen has some issues with that. Now, maybe that will be mitigated by being in their park with the big wall over there. But, you know, Stranton Dominguez is supposed to be the new closer, and his one issue is home runs. And, you know, Yennier Cano doesn't necessarily miss bats. I worry. I think this Kansas City team is going to wipe off the stink of their ugly September and turn the page on that. And I really like the way they line up with their pitching. I think they have enough hitting. Their bullpen is also a question, but I think they can take Baltimore down.
Yeah, and by the way, for those who have been following the Royals, we had them in a month during the season as the MLB most wins market. So we're real familiar with the Royals roster. Vinny Pascantino was added to the roster.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's going to DH for them, which is a huge boon for an offense that is really good right there at 2-3-4, and then maybe not so great after that, generally speaking, but he's massive for them.
That is absolutely huge to get Vinny Pasquantino back, even if he's not necessarily 100%. You can draw a perfect line between their struggles and losing him.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that it was him, you know, correlation versus causation, but you cannot deny that he was a big piece out of their lineup at a time when they could ill afford it. They're going to need a Michael Massey, a Michael Garcia, a Kyle Isbell, somebody like that to step up. It can't just be Witt and Pasquantino. They need some guys to step up for them. Of course, Sal Perez is another stalwart there, too. So they've got the pieces to do it. It's just a matter of stepping up. But I like this KC Ball Club to be frogging against Baltimore.
Okay, so you have the Royals advancing to take on the Yankees, and you've got the Astros advancing to take on the Guardians. Remember, there are no reseedings here. This is all in a bracket, so they stay static like that. Let's go to the National League. The 3-6 between the Brewers and the Mets. This is the most tightly lined of all the wild card series, Paul. The Brewers only minus 131 favorites.
And I think that's understandable. I think people are still looking and wondering kind of where does the pitching come from. They've pieced their pitching together this year too. You know, we talk about the Tigers running without a traditionally deep rotation. It's not like the Brewers are necessarily doing that. Freddie Peralta's up at the top, and then Tobias Myers, Colin Ray have really stepped up. Frankie Montas is kind of their X factor, though. A trade acquisition that kind of went under the radar. Big arm, really liked him out in Oakland, but started struggling once he left Oakland for New York. The injuries struck. Didn't show anything in Cincinnati that made me particularly excited about it. And then starts to click a bit with Milwaukee because they do a lot of positive things there in terms of getting the best out of their pitchers. It starts with William Contreras and then works with their defense as well. So they put their pitchers in the best positions to succeed. I do like this ball club here with the Brewers. I think their offense is deep enough, even without Yelich, to take on this Mets team here. I think the Mets are very much game. That's why it is a toss-up here. But I think push come to shove, I'm going to go with the Brewers, and I think they're going to go ahead and take it in three.
Okay, Brewers in three. Severino against Peralta in that one today. And then it's the Padres and the Braves, which begins tonight. Obviously, the Braves with that win in game two of the doubleheader yesterday against the Mets after the dramatic loss in game one. So they coast in. I shouldn't say coast. That game was kind of tight yesterday.
Right.
Although I said even though when it was 1-0, it felt like it was 100-0. The Padres
really did.
Yeah, Padres are -180 in this series. They're -162 in the ball game today at Petco. What do you like?
Yeah, I'm all over the Padres there. So you know, it could be another one of those like Cinderellas where the team that we're overlooking the most ends up making a run with Atlanta. But I'm just not sure I see it, especially if this Sale thing is real and not like, oh, he needs an extra day or even maybe some gamesmanship. You know, I've heard some chatter like, oh, maybe they sat him on purpose. I don't know why you would do that with your life on the line, but maybe they were confident enough in Grant Holmes and Raylo that they were going to just get that game. And now they're trying to play possum on San Diego and they're going to unveil Sale. But if he's not good to go, I'm just not sure where it's coming from with them. I do like Sale, Fried, Raylo as a top three. That's pretty intriguing. And Schwellenbach, I didn't even mention him. So they've got some really good starting pitching, but they've been hemorrhaging players out of their lineup. I think the San Diego team is loaded. They were awesome last year, and they had that terrible extra innings and one run records. We knew that the team wasn't bad. This year, they're not that drastically different, and yet they play drastically different because their luck starts to break on the late and close games, and they play a bit better with that great bullpen that they got at the deadline. I love this Padres team, and you're going to hear me talk a lot about them as we go further into our playoff guesses too.
Yeah, just to clarify again, today it's Skubal versus Valdez in really the best pitching matchup of them all, where the total is flirting with six, right, in that ball game between the Tigers and the Astros. Royals-Orioles is Reagans against Burns. The Royals bullpen looking good of late, which is a bit of a development as well. Then Mets Brewers, as we mentioned, Severino Peralta. We do not have a named Braves starter yet against Michael King, who is getting the ball for the San Diego Padres tonight. Okay, we got 60 seconds, Paul. Let's put you on record here before the postseason. Who's meeting in the World Series? Who's playing? Who's winning it?
It's going to be Padres, Yankees, and I got the Padres winning it. I just think what they've done with that bullpen, with the acquisitions that they had, the starting pitching that they already had, the great star talent on offense that they have. I mean, this is, I don't want to say a sleeping giant because I don't think they're asleep, but I think this Padres team is excellent. There are questions with the Yankees, but they are still a really deep and excellent team too. They can make a big run here. I think they get all the way to the finals there in the World Series against the Padres. But in the end, the Padres win in six.
And that would be a 1999 World Series revenge
matchup.
That's right. Yes.
That's right.
By the way, so many of these matchups would be a World Series revenge matchups as well. There's a lot of those. All right, Padres over the Yankees. A lot of Padres love out there, Paul. Does that scare you that everybody seems to love them?
No, they probably heard that I was on and wanted to get on board. I understand.
That's what it was. They're like, what did Spore have? Okay, Padres it is.
Exactly.
I got them in three World Series matchups. The Yankees are not one of them, though. So I hope it's the Padres, but I hope it's not against the Yankees. Paul, thank you.
That's fine by me.
Enjoy the game tonight. Or this afternoon, I should say. Yeah. All right. Paul Spore, everybody, on his way to watch his Tigers take on the Astros in game one. Tigers-Astros begins the day at 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific, and then it's Royals-Orioles 90 minutes after that, Mets-Brewers 90 minutes after that, and then a little later on into the night, the Braves and the Padres. Money Moves with Stormy and Mike Somich. That's Mike Somich, everybody. Next, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Enjoy.